Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Shut your face. We speak the truth here. We only like to talk about the truth. Real life, nitty gritty shit. Okay. We don't like lies. We don't like liars. We like the real deal. And we also talk to some really cool people. So thanks for listening. Check us out on our Patreon and hit that follow button.
Yeah, no. So we pretty much, it is a good conversation, and it's good to be able to talk to people that have been in the industry a really long time and can kind of give a little bit of insight on, you know, why they are where they are, you know, how they got there and certain things like that. Because, you know, I have found with the horse industry is that we can be a little bit closed off when it comes to new people. And then we also just don't know. And I'm the type of person where I would rather ask and find out for myself than just assume and look like an idiot. So I thought it'd be cool to talk to people and learn more about the business and stuff like that. You know, I obviously am not a breeder. I don't do what you do for a living. I have no idea. You know, I grew up doing 4-H and pleasure horses, and that was it, you know. So it's cool to see how much more, I don't want to say technical, but more professional the horse industry can be, because you have things like what you guys do, and then, you know, the whole stallion station thing and the way that all that stuff works. It's just kind of, it's crazy. So how many total stallions do you guys have there now?
This year, 2025, we have 33 stallions on our roster. That doesn't mean that they're all physically here. Some of them are deceased, so they're frozen semen only, or some of them are, you know, live in international, you know, Europe or Australia, and we actually are the distribution hub here in the U.S. Some are continuing to show, so they're here sometimes, not. But we have 22 that are here all year round, and then some that come here part season and then leave. So, but you know, we represent 33 currently.
Oh wow. Okay, now back to the Australia and Europe thing. So you are going to go to Australia this year, right? And you've already been 4 times?
Oh no, I've been 20 times.
You did the finals four times.
I've competed there 4 times.
Got you. I apologize. Okay, cool.
No, it's okay.
We had a guy on here who was from Australia, and he said there's no sales tax down there. And when he got to the United States, it was hilarious because he said he went into the grocery store and like saw like whatever it was, like a gallon of milk for $3. And so he went to go buy it for $3. And the person was like, no, it's three whatever or four whatever with the sales tax. And he said that he was not used to that. And he was, you know, born in Australia, but ended up here training horses. What's probably one of the coolest things that you think is the difference between the United States, the way that we do horses, versus some of the other places that you've been?
Well, that's a great question. You know, Brazil, it's highly passionate people. It has way less to do with dollars and cents than it does to do with the love and thrill and fun of what they're doing. And they you know, Brazilians are highly passionate people. they're a lot of fun. But you know, they want to win because there's pride behind it.
Cool.
Not to say that isn't the way it is here. Of course it's the way it is here, but to a different degree. It's much more specialized here. It's much more, you know, there's a lot of prize money on the line here, you know, so there's a lot of pressure to do well, because it matters.
Yeah.
And it matters for the reputation of the trainer and for the breeder and, you know, for the horse owner. And, you know, there's just a lot to it. It's way more, the degree of difficulty is way higher here than it is in Brazil, but they're very, very passionate. Australia, they have, you know, Brianna, they have amazing horsemen. you know, population of the country of Australia is smaller than the state of Texas. So, you know, they just don't have the amount of people. You know, the geography, the country of Australia is almost as large as the continental U.S. So they have a huge country, but they have less people in an entire country than we do in the state of Texas.
I did not know
this. Their population is, you know, around 24 million, I think. We could, you know, Google it or AI it real quick, but I think it's around 24 million. And I think there's like 33 million people that live in the state of Texas. But their ratio of people that like horses, are involved with horses, and, you know, have horses is probably double the ratio in the U.S. So they're very, very, they have an affiliation for horses, mm-hmm. both racing and, you know, they have what they call stock horses over there. If you've ever seen the movie A Man for Snowy River, those are stock horses. And they're great horsemen, and that there's a huge sport over there called camp drafting. It's kind of a combination between rain cow horse and barrel, I would say, to some degree.
I grew up on those movies, on The Man from Snowy River and The Return of the Man from Snowy River. Like, those are the movies I grew up on. Like, that, his whole ordeal is wild. A lot of horse people could never do that.
Well, it's one of the best westerns of all time that's not a western.
Yeah, right. It's like one of the staple horse movies ever. Like, not even John Wayne doesn't even come on that list, which, you know, I grew up on those too. But anyways, so
But Australia, they're great, great horsemen. Some of the best horsemen to ever live have transplanted, you know, have immigrated to the U.S. and kind of added their own stuff here. But just, you know, the ratio is, for example, why is Australia a wonderful place for me? Well, the southern, you know, the Australia and Brazil are southern hemisphere, so it's the opposite breeding season. When we're breeding here, it's their winter time. When it's winter time here, it's their breeding season. So I get to kind of switch focus from the things that we're doing in the U.S. from February through July. You know, it kicks on there from August to January. So that's cool. A fun thing for me as well.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. But now back to Germany, though. Did you not really like Germany?
Oh, I love Germany. Germany's great.
Yeah.
You know, it's much more of a reining and dressage area than, say, cutting and cow horses, because they just don't have the herds of cattle that the U.S. has, that Australia has, that Brazil has.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's more of a logistics thing. You know, they just don't have what we have here. And, you know, Europe is really small. You know, the state of Texas, I think, fits over the continental, you know, European states, you know, countries.
I'm gonna have to Google
that. Yeah, it's not very big. So, you know, they just don't have the volume of cattle that we have here. The next big area, the next big frontier, once the, you know, we'll see how things go with politics, but, you know, China has lots of cattle. They have the fourth largest cattle herd in the world. And, I speak Chinese, and it's fun. We have some Chinese sometimes show up in Fort Worth and they want to go to a horse ranch. So they kind of Google and they show up here, and they always get shocked when I just start speaking Mandarin Chinese to them. But, it's hilarious. Sometimes they'll show up with a cowboy hat on backwards, or they just went down to the stockyards and purchased. And but they love it once things develop over there and they have more freedom and liberty. You know, that cowboy way of life is very attractive. And, you know, this is a passion thing. Yeah. And the people that have that bug, they'll sacrifice anything to keep going with it.
How long did it take you to learn Chinese?
I lived in Taiwan for 2 years being a church missionary. So, it was my dedicated focus for 2 years of my life. And, you know, that's where I learned the language and got to love the Chinese people. I mean, Taiwan is not, you know, the mainland communist China. The Taiwanese people are very, very free and, you know, but it's the Chinese culture, and that's where I learned Chinese.
Oh, I thought Korea was the more communist ordeal, and Korea and China are separate. I thought China was good. They're not communist.
I don't know. This is Taiwan. not Korea. No, China is definitely communist.
Oh, okay. I don't know this. Obviously, I don't know. I'm gonna have to Google this. This is way over my head. I had no idea. I think that's cool though. To like, I don't know. I think like what we were talking about earlier. It's cool to kind of listen to other people that look outside of what we're used to in the United States. Like we were talking about how, you know, things are. I don't want to say spoiled, but I think the United States horse market and industry is spoiled compared to some of the other places. You know, like we were talking about with Brazil, the way that Brazil does barrel races down there is insane. Like it was blowing people's mind when this girl posted it on the Facebook. They were like, that would never fly here, we would never do that here. Like they
I rode one in Brazil. I mean it was a ball.
Yeah,
it's as much fun as I've had riding a horse.
But they had to weigh in. Like, the rider can't be a certain weight. Yes. The horse has to be a certain weight. They have to check in with the bits. They have to do all this kind of stuff. And I just think it's wild because, whereas the United States, they don't do that. We literally had a hissy fit when the whole, they were going to put in the law with the whole Western justice thing was fighting in the law. And I had an episode with a girl that's in horse racing. She's like, we do that already. Like, we already, they have to write down everything that they give their horses, all types of stuff. Everything's regulated. You have to have a license to be a horse trainer. And it's like, you know, why don't they apply that same thing throughout the whole industry? You know, like,
well, there's pro, again, Brianna, there's pros and cons, you know. Pros is it standardizes things. Cons, it limits some people's ability to participate. It also, it, you know, kind of alienates a certain group of people. Maybe they economically they can't afford to do those things. It makes the people that have, you know, might be able to have less competition than, you know. So there's just pros and cons. I see it both ways, and I'm a laissez-faire, liberty-loving capitalist, but I also understand that you have to have rules of the game so that, you know, it can be made fair and free for everyone.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think capitalism is, like, you have to have money for the world to go around. Like, it's just, it's the way
well,
it works.
My money's life, you know.
Well, I think it's just a matter of a morality. Like, you can't let it affect, like, people get into certain things like that, but you have to have money. Like, you have to have money to have the world go round. So, I'm all for that. If you can make on it, go for it. I wanted to ask you, too, when did you know, you said about how you grew up with your parents, they did racehorses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then you ended up in Texas. When did you kind of just know that this was for you? Because, you know, you do have a lot of kids that are raised around it. They're like, the horses is not for me. When did you kind of just say, okay, this is for me. This is for me. I'm going to keep this going.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't when I was growing up. I wanted to go be a football player. I wanted to, you know, go do all those kinds of things. You know, going to Taiwan that I mentioned to you, and speaking Chinese when I went home and went to college and whatnot, I thought I was going to go do some kind of international business trade of some kind, go to business school. But when my dad got that cutting horse and I started to participate with that, that changed my thought process. It brought me back down to my roots of, you know, horses and the things that I experienced as a kid being a, you know, quote unquote slave labor. I mean, my parents were the best people on planet Earth. But, you know, they would put us to work and it taught us how to work. And I'm very, very grateful for that. But, and then, you know, he got me involved in working for him as a bookkeeper and an accountant. And that kind of started to help me understand things, you know, from, you know, accounting is the language of business. And I started to kind of see that side of it, but he gave me opportunities. There's five kids in my parents' family and I'm the youngest of five, but you know, however it worked out when they decided they wanted to sell, you know, we tried to figure out how to, their five kids purchased the family business and his brother who had worked for him for 30 plus years. So six people trying to buy this, you know, asset. And we just couldn't figure that out. And my wife and I said, we're either going to buy all of it or buy none of it. And that ended up being what happened. But, you know, to answer your question, when did I know that this is what I wanted to do? Not until I got in the heart and soul of it. And I found out that, you know, I'm an entrepreneur by heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have other business interests. This is by far the most important one to me. But you know, whether it would be horses or ice cream, I would be in business. But I found out that I have knowledge. I have a reputation. People trust, you know, me and the things that we do, and we have a track record, and I'm passionate about it. So again, when it comes back to don't take advice from somebody that doesn't make a living doing it. you name it, I've done it. Mm. And I see what works, and I know the pain of when it doesn't work. I mean, Brianna, I'm not going to say that every decision I make is right. I mean, heck no. I've failed more times than I've succeeded, but I've also learned from those things. And breeding horses is, you know, it's just a game of probabilities. There's so many variables that go involved, but, you know, it is like you know the stallion, you know the mare, and the stallion's going to contribute half of his genes into the baby, and the mare's going to contribute half of her genes. So you got 50-50, and then you look down the pedigree and you see their grandparents, and you're going to say, okay, 25% grandpa, 25% grandma, 25%, you know, so it's just math, right? You go another generation back and it's 12.5%. And people talk about these things like inbreeding versus line breeding, and I'm sure you've heard that kind of terminology. Brianna, it all means the same thing. You know, if a horse shows up multiple times in a horse's pedigree, whether you want to call it inbreeding or line breeding, it's the same thing. I can just add those up and say, okay, that's the probability that that horse's genes are going to be in this baby. But, you know, my parents had five kids. I have five kids, same sire, same dam. Why did they get five different results? Well, genetics are complicated. You know, when that sperm enters that egg and meiosis starts to occur, half of the genetic material that dad gave and half the genetic material that mom gave disappear. And it's the stuff that's left over that lays down the dominant recessive genes. So that's when you can have two full siblings. They can look different. They can act different. There's going to be similar traits. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But you start to try to, through animal husbandry and mating selection, you can give yourself advantages. Mm-hmm. And that's the passionate thing I have about horses. I like showing cutting horses, but it's not what my passion is. My passion is mating selection. My passion is seeing that foal hit the ground, whether I own it and I sell. I mean, they're all sold, basically. I get to then watch that horse's journey, and but I was the creator. I got to, it was my decisions that made that possible. That's really what I am passionate about. Mm-hmm. And having that be a business that I get to be involved with every day and share that passion with other people, it's deeply rewarding to me. I want to grow and scale and do all the entrepreneur things that people, but there's a limiting factor. You ask me how many stallions I stand 33. That's too many, you know. But this great customer has this horse and wants to do this. I mean, you know, should have, you know, fewer, but there's reasons why, and I can defend my reason, my rationale all day long. But, you know, you want to do the best you can with the amount of time you have and the people that are around you.
Right. I was going to ask you, do you think it's more exciting to know what the baby's going to be versus kind of back in the old days? I hate to say it like that because I'm only 40, but back in the 90s and 2000s when it was a surprise, do you think it's better to have it so pre-calculated and so like laid out that you can pretty much just know exactly what's going to happen versus kind of being surprised? Do you think that that's taken away that?
You know, it's your money, it's your asset, it's your stock. You should do exactly what you want. I mean, I don't want anybody to be upset with what I'm about to say, but it's just my constitution. This is livestock. They're your horses. You can eat them if you want to. So they're yours. I have no say-so what you should do with your horses. And by God, you have no say-so in what I'm going to do with my horses. Now, I treat my horses really, really well. You know, but they're mine, and, you know, keep your opinions to yourself because I don't care. But to answer your question, you know, I have five kids. My wife demanded that she knew the sex of the first four. And I said, honey, it's my turn, and I want to be surprised. So that fifth one, that surprise, that was pretty fun, you know.
Yeah.
But did I support her in wanting to know the sex and all that stuff of the first four? You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, she's always right. I'm, you know, right sometimes, but
yeah.
That
happy
was more
wife,
fun
happy
to me.
Life.
But, you know, I will never buy into, you know, gene manipulation. I will never buy into ordering a horse's genes on a catalog and saying that, you know, I'm going to manipulate that. That takes the husbandry out. That takes the that will just, to me, that will be the death knell of you know, is that going to happen? Probably, you know, but I will never adhere to that. I do a lot of the advanced repro stuff, Brianna, where we're talking about, like, for human women, it's called in vitro fertilization. For horses, it's called aspiration, and ICSI, which is single sperm injection. I have a whole inventory of frozen embryos, for example, 65 to date, and I hope to continue to get more. But that provides me economic options, not necessarily I want to hit the world with volume. So there's reasons why I do what I do. But I genuinely believe that the best thing for any breeder is for you to have options, for you to be able to make decisions. I mean, I can have three full siblings hit the ground in one breeding season, Brianna, and have three different results. So it isn't all calculated, it isn't all known. To give you an example, I have a very good cross that has worked consistently over the years that I continue to do. Same stallion, the same mare. I do embryo transfers, so it's not just the single baby that mare is, that dam is having, but this cross works every time. And I've now had probably six babies that are all different sex, different color, you know. So there's a lot of variety, even though when they're full siblings.
This year
I had a 5% chance on that cross to have a black foal, and I had a black foal, you know, and that's pretty unique.
Yeah, no, it's great. That's what I'm saying is, you know, do you think it's helped the industry or hurt the industry that you can literally just call them up and be like, all right, well, I want this, this, and this versus the magic of having a little bit of mystery to it, you know, because, I mean,
I to answer your question, I'm a hybrid of those two worlds.
Yeah.
You know, I want to give people options, but I'm not into taking it the full spectrum of, hey, I want to manipulate the embryo to make sure I get a Palomino.
Yeah.
You know,
I didn't even know you could do this. So I don't. I mean, when you talk about that, like, I had no idea you could actually do that. I mean, I thought that would be an ethical thing.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, that might be an ethical thing as far as like what you're talking about, because I don't know anything about it, but I would foresee that to be a, you know, there might be some lines that should probably be left alone, you know, but I don't know. Again, it's not my business. It's your business. Now, I did want to ask you where, you know, obviously you guys are in other countries and you do have 33 stallions there. What goals do you have for your business, you know, in the next year or two, or maybe in the next 5-10 years, where would you like to see your business continue to grow and succeed at?
That is a great question. I'm not a goal guy. I do my best every single day and let the consequences follow kind of a person. So
that's a good way of putting it.
You know, where do I want to be? I want to be in business. I want to have success in all ways that success can be measured, as far as, you know, good cash flow for my business and sanity that way. I'd love to see our clients win, whether that's through, you know, breeding quality mares for their stallion or their stallion's offspring out there competing and doing well. The customers that we service here with a horse, full-time horse trainer, and his clients go out and do well. You know, for example, just last month we had a 13-year-old young man go to his very first aged event here in Fort Worth, Texas, Will Rogers Coliseum, and he made his first finals, and he got a big shiny belt buckle, and you're seeing this young man smile from ear to ear, and you know, that's quite the accomplishment. It's not my horse. I'm not his father. I had no economic involvement other than I employed the horse trainer that got the horse, you know, to the show and trained it.
So but, y'all have a horse trainer there?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
you're not just a breeding facility.
No, no. We there's a lot of, you know, nuances to what we do. Yeah, Christian Miller, he's resident trainer here. He won the world last year. He won the world championship, hauled for the world. He's the youngest horse trainer in history to do it, and he's a great horse trainer, great
that's
man,
cool.
And I mean, he's been with me for, I think, for 7 years now.
I didn't know that. That's really cool. No, that's great.
But see, I got a lot of joy at watching that happen, and I was a little part of it.
Yeah.
So it's things like that, you know, I had a client come in, and you know, he hauled some mares in for breeding, and we visited for an hour, and he's like my brother. We've been doing business a long time, and just hearing about his situation and his life, and you know, that didn't put any more money in my bank account, but that sure was gratifying and you know, meant a lot to me that we got to have that time together.
Yeah. Do you think that Yellowstone being off the air is going to affect business in any way, shape, or form? Not necessarily your business, but I mean in general, like the industry in general. Do you think, like what we were talking about, having that effect, bring it up, do you think we're going to see effects with it going off of the air?
You know, it's that's a complex thing. I think the general economy will have more to do with people breeding horses, owning horses, and competing horses than any TV show. But I'm immensely grateful for the TV show bringing awareness to Western heritage, to the cowboy way of life, to, you know, the possibilities of what can happen with selling horses for lots of money. I mean, you know, the Taylors, they were a couple that he was a logger in Oregon. And he had $17,500 to go buy a yearling horse in the Kentucky Keeneland sale, and this was back in the 70s, and he bought a horse that he named Seattle Slough. Mm. And Seattle Slough went on to win the Triple Crown and was one of the premier breeding stallions of all time, and he was at one time syndicated for $50 million. And Mickey Taylor's famous quote was, "I don't think I'll ever have to chop down another tree."
Nah.
Now, Brianna, it's things like that have happened, do happen, that gives any person with this horse passion fuel that it can happen for them too. Now, the odds of it happening are very, very low, but have I ever won the NCHA Futurity? No. Am I going to continue to try? Yes. You know,
isn't the Triple Crown, like, right? Racehorsing is a completely different ball game than your average, you know, I mean, I hate to say average, but like the money that you can win with horse racing is in a whole nother caliber that'll never be touched. Like the Kentucky, like all of that area out there, that's in its own little world. I'm talking about, you know, like seeing pleasure shows go from 20 to 30 folks to now 100 and plus. You see random people that never owned a horse before spending $20,000 on you know, a 5 or 6 year old that's trained. You see all these trainers and stuff. You know, the show did affect the industry in massive ways because it brought eyes that have never seen a horse into it, which brought more money into an industry that didn't see it, you know, because horses, only 1.2 million people in the United States own a horse. It's 334 million in the entire, you know, United States, just to put it into perspective for you. So that's what I'm asking. Do you think that the industry is going to kind of come back down after that hype, take the economy out of it? Or do you think, you know, that it's going to, that it just went up and it's going to stay?
Well, on the economic level, I think that there's going to be corrections, you know, so I don't think that it's going to have a dive, but I think there'll be a correction in those kinds of values. Like you said, somebody buying a pleasure horse that, you know, they spent $20,000 on it because there was high competition at the time. But I don't think that horse is going to drop down to $10,000. I think there'll be a correction that it might be 17.5 or 17 or 16 or something like that. And I'm not even saying that that's an overall bad thing.
Yeah.
I don't like bubbles. I don't like inflation, but I don't see anything on the horizon that's going to change horses going to shows, people owning them or breeding them, unless we have nuclear war. And if we have that, who gives a crap about anything else? So, do I think there's going to be changes because that TV show's no longer here? Maybe, but not to the degree that it's going to be like, industry changing or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's probably got its height. It'll come back to normal. Hopefully, but anyhow. Now, one last thing I kind of wanted to talk to you about was, do you think that the breeding industry is, do you think that all of the new things that come into the breeding industry, like the embryo transfers and the ICSI, I think I've been saying it wrong, but ICSI or whatever. Do you think that that is something that needs to stay exclusive to certain people, or do you think that's something that should be available to all breeders and all places that kind of do what you do? Do you think that, because it's growing so much and a lot of people want it and it's very, attractive to people, like what we were talking about, if you want to buy a horse and you want to invest in the horse industry, it'd be nice to be able to have, to know exactly what you're going to get as far as that product, that foal is concerned. Do you think that that's something that should be available to all the people within the industry that are coming up, or do you think it should be something that should stay exclusive to certain people that kind of know what they're doing?
So I'd like to, ask you some follow-up questions to understand exactly where you're coming from. Are you saying like a registry making it accessible to everybody, that they're going to allow the foals to be registered? Or are you saying, like economically, that the cost to do it is so much lower that more people can afford to do it? I'm trying to understand where your question is coming from.
For people to be able to just do it, I guess. Because I guess it's nice that you can kind of go in and manipulate a breeding, or not manipulate, but, put together what you want to get a foal out of it, or to get whatever product that you're selling, because that is what it is. If I called you up and said, hey, I want a reiner and I want him to look like this, and this is what I want to be able to happen with my horse, your job essentially is to pull out your books and go, okay, well, I think this and this is going to get you that baby. Okay. The ability to do that with like embryo transfer and let's say that it is during the winter time and you've got to do this and you got to get a recip mare and you got to do all this kind of stuff that you guys got to do to make it happen. Do you think that that should be available to everybody as far as, I guess, cost is concerned, but also just anybody that wanted to do that as a business, versus it being kind of exclusive to just certain places? Because there's only certain places that offer that now, probably a handful of places. Do you foresee it being
I think that it should be available to everyone that wants to do it, and I think that it currently is. I mean, there's no reason that somebody that doesn't want to do it can't do it in America. There's no reason that someone doesn't want to provide those services can't provide those services in America. The only licensing that's involved is veterinary license. And as long as you feel like your veterinarian or the service provider that has that license has the qualifications and the knowledge and expertise to be able to perform that procedure, and you have the capital, the cash to be able to afford to do it, have at it. But it's so specialized, it's you don't want to pay somebody to earn their education doing it. You want to make sure you're paying a professional that has experience and success doing it. For example, let's say, Brianna, you wanted to come to Buffalo Ranch here and you had a mare and you wanted to aspirate her and do single sperm injection, that ICSI procedure with stallions that we have here. And you were fortunate enough to get 10 frozen embryos in the off season. Your mare wasn't even in cycle. She's a show horse. You don't want to have her carrying a foal because you want to continue competing on her. But you got these 10 frozen embryos that you get to use in the future whenever you want to. And let's just say that next breeding season, you had two of your own surrogate mares, recipient mares, we call them, that you want to unthaw those frozen embryos and transfer them into this surrogate mare, and the surrogate mare carries that foal to term, foals out the baby, and you got to have your cake by having a show mare and a brood mare at the same time and eat it too. You have your cake and eat it too, to do two things at once. And you wanted to do that, you should be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But 10 frozen embryos, what is their value? Their value is zero. They're not worth anything. Babies are worth money. A frozen embryo has no intrinsic value. So making sure you
have the right... I've seen them fail. What do you mean?
It can't do anything with a frozen embryo. You can't ride it.
Well, no, I mean, people have bought them, though.
Oh, sure, but that's just gambling. Yeah. I mean, they're not, they can't even insure that those embryos. You can insure a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. We call that in utero. Mm-hmm. We call that pro-foal insurance. But what I'm getting at is that you want to make sure that you're aligning yourself, you're employing professionals that they can take that frozen embryo, unthaw it, which is science, which there's a lot to it. You don't go put it in the microwave and unthaw it. You know, that would be bad. Don't ever do that. But you unthaw it, and you have to make sure the timing is perfect for this recipient mare to go transfer that embryo. That's not 100% guarantee that mare's going to get pregnant.
You just made me think about a story. So I grew up around horses ever since I was 3 years old. And we had my mare who lived to be 30 years old. Now, back in the 90s, the veterinary technology was nowhere near what it is now. We bred her. We tried to breed her a couple of times. We had a lot of our own babies here. And anyways, we bred her, and she lost it. Well, this stud obviously had a guarantee. He was down at the beach. And so we bred her again. She was having twins. And of course, we had the vet out here. We did all that normal stuff that you're supposed to do. We did the x-rays and the ultrasounds and all that kind of stuff. And luckily, knock on wood, this was, again, back in the 90s, you didn't have twins. Like, you had to kill one of them. That was the procedure back then. Luckily,
pinching.
Yep. Luckily, she had them, and they were dead when she had them, but she lived, thank God. And of course, we donated the bodies to state. I'm in North Carolina. We sent them to North Carolina State when it happened. We did not try anymore. We said, this ain't what we're trying to do in life. You know, we're just trying to have fun. But it's funny to see just how much the technology has grown from that type of situation where we had nothing. We could do nothing. What could you do? To now, you take embryos and you can literally buy them and go put them in a mare if you want to.
Yes.
I think my question was, and I apologize, I didn't mean to confuse you, is I didn't know that you have to be a vet to do that stuff. I thought that you stallion stations were offered that service there. So you just house the stallions, and then if I call you up and go, hey, you know, I want to buy a baby or whatever, you have to send me to a vet to do the processes? You guys don't do that in-house, right?
Oh, no, we do it in-house, but it's done by a veterinarian.
Okay, that's the clicker to the whole question. For some reason, I thought that this process, all of these new breeding processes, like, you know, the transfer, all of that, everything that you keep talking about, I thought that you guys did that at the stallion stations. Like, that's what was a part of your service. But I could just call up any vet and they can do it.
Well, I mean, it goes much deeper than that, Brianna.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want to your own horse. Yeah. You can do the procedure, but you can't legally do it to somebody else's horse. There's too much liability and it's against the law.
Yeah.
So we do that here, but a veterinarian comes in and does it here.
Okay, that's what...
Right, because you have to look at it from the veterinarian's point of view. They don't want to go to everybody's... They'd rather just go to one... I mean, this is a terrible analogy, but I'm going to say it anyways. Walmart's very, very successful because all of the vendors have one place to go to sell their product. It's much, much more difficult for all those vendors to sell their products by themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So a stallion station is kind of like that, where we're a network, we're a hub that does all these other benefits for people. So that's why we do it here. because it's much easier to facilitate 10 different mare owners bringing their mare to one facility to do it than the veterinarian going to 10 different locations.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
That answers the question. So you just have a vet that comes in.
Yeah. I mean, I employ vets, and we have vets that a veterinarian is a lot like an attorney. You have a tax attorney, you have a criminal attorney, you have, you know, you don't, if you're, heaven forbid, you're ever on, you know, a murder trial, you're not going to hire your estate planning attorney to come defend you. they're not going to know what to do. You have veterinarians that are very, very good at sports medicine and making sure a horse stays sound. You have reproduction veterinarians. You have internal medicine veterinarians that, you know, for horse colics. And then you have general practice veterinarians. They're kind of like a general practice doctor that, you know, they can do a little bit of everything, but they're not specialized in anything.
Right, yeah. Okay, so that answers my question. It's a specialist veterinarian that kind of does stuff. You can't just call up your normal vet and do it.
No.
And you guys are there to offer that service to somebody like me.
That wants to do it, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
For some people, Brianna, it makes perfect sense. And for other people, it makes no sense. I mean, I make a living breeding horses. But, you know, if somebody... There's three, you know, three main things that somebody needs to look at when they're breeding a horse. We talked about genetics, you know, the pedigree of a horse. Certain bloodlines complement other bloodlines and produce certain traits that are good for that horse sport, cutting, barrel, roping, whatever, racing, that they're highly specialized to do those things. I mean, a thoroughbred racehorse is going to run really, really fast, and a Clydesdale is going to pull a really heavy load. And they're not.
You would think that's common sense, but for some people, it's not.
It's not going to go the other way around. So genetics, right?
Yeah.
The second leg of a three-legged stool is phenotype. You're trying to produce an individual to do a certain job. So if you want to have a horse run a mile, it's going to look like a thoroughbred. If you want a horse to cut a cow and be that equine gymnast that can get low center of gravity and turn on a dime and do all those amazing things that cutting horses can do, it's going to look like a little gymnast, you know, and so on. This phenotype, the things that we can see, what they look like, what their temperament is, color, height, build, all those things. So that's the second leg of a stool. And the third leg is economics. I mean, If you have a mare that's...
Sorry about that. That was my dad.
That's okay. I have one of those too.
Yeah, so he's 80-something, little 80 and years old, and so I try to not miss out any time that he happens to stop by here.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but no. So all of the stuff that you're talking about is pretty common sense. I do understand that some people may think they could take a dressage horse and put it in a cutting ring, but they'll be sadly going to be disappointed if that's the case. But you do have people that will argue that with you. They will literally argue with how come my 14 hand can't jump a 3-foot fence, because it's not made to, Karen. That's why. But anyhow, yes, the three legs of breeding and the things.
There's also a reason why their kid isn't, you know, playing in the NFL, because
exactly.
He's not good enough.
Exactly. So yeah. I have had those types of conversations before with people. I think that's admirable to be able to do that and keep it business and not bring emotion into it. But you are right. Some people can. And I think that's why it's really hard to differentiate that line sometimes when you're dealing with people in the horse industry, because they do look at it as emotional. It's their baby, you know, not just money, but it's their baby. And, you know, some people can get emotional about it and some don't.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But from my point of view, you're actually doing your horse a disservice if you can't provide what it needs to be successful.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The same people that look at it as a baby are the ones who, you know, end up getting hurt. It's a 1,000-pound animal. So
yeah,
it is what it is. You just gotta, you know, it is what it is. But I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. It was really nice to meet you.
Yeah, likewise.
Alexis is a sweet girl.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's a integral part to my team, and she's like my little sister, and I love her and glad she's here.
Yeah, we did those blankets for whoever two of them are. She was really sweet.
Yeah. Well, his name is Shank, and he's out from your way, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he lives in South Carolina.
At Creek Plantation?
Well, they were another client, but Home Place Landing Cattle, real close to Creek Plantation.
We had a CP mare by accident once, somehow, and we were like, what's its brand? And they told us what it was or whatever. They were really nice folks. Like, I sent them a picture.
They're great.
Yeah, they were really cool. That's the only one I know that's around here.